You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Tuesday, 12 October. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, chatting with Gary Boyson from Rand Swiss. Earnings season is kicking off. We've got some banks coming this week. What are expectations? We chat with Andries Rousseau, PwC Africa Energy. What's happening with coal and coal stocks in particular? We're not producing more, but prices are going crazy. And then Neil Perdow from Coronation. He runs the Global Managed Fund. He's got some interesting stocks in there. Equifax, JD.com, particularly JD.com. Of course, it's a Chinese company. They've held it since listing. I want to dig into that. The show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit StanLib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb. Treasury bans use of imported cement on all government-funded projects. This saw a surge in PPC up 9%, Sepaku up 6%. There's been talk. We've chatted with PPC around essentially putting a surcharge on the import of cement, and they've kind of gone a different way. I suppose this does work. Business Day, Election Day, 1 November will be a public holiday. Did they declare a public holiday for 27 October, which was going to be the date? And I can't remember if they did, but I suspect that they probably didn't. But if they have, maybe they forget to take it away. Morning markets are red across the board. US, we got the S&P and the NASDAQ down 0.7%. And Asia, we got Sydney off 0.4, Tokyo down 0.6. Commodities mixed, gold 1758, Brent 8365, ticking higher. Palladium, $2,111 an ounce. Red overnight, but green on the day over day. Rand 1507, top 40. Red open down about 480 points. That's about 0.8%. That as Tencent trades down 2.5% in Hong Kong.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Training now with Gary Boyson from Rand Swiss, also the most recent stockbroker of the year. Gary, congrats on the award that you won. I think it was just 2 weeks ago at Intellidex. Kicking off into US season, starting this week, we've got some banks reporting. What is the sort of expectation for the earnings season? I mean, there's certainly some challenges out there around supply chains and staffing. Maybe that's not going to hurt the banks so much, but what are you looking for in this earnings season out of the US?
Oh, thanks, Simon. Looking at earnings season, I think we're expecting a little bit of a shift away from the consumer discretionary stocks that really benefited from an earnings point of view from those very direct stimulus measures that were put in place by the US government, and shift more towards the materials and industrial companies. So especially just on rising commodity prices. So overall, if you just look at the S&P 500, they're expecting earnings growth. And when I say they, that's the consensus of Wall Street analysts are looking for around 24% earnings growth, which is still a little bit of that legacy base effect from the big knock that we took over COVID and the lower earnings just coming back to light. Revenue growth is expected just over 6%. So you can see earnings growing a little bit more quickly than revenue. And then obviously in subsequent earnings season, you'll see that earnings moderate a little bit further. So, that's kind of the official numbers. But of course, with every US earnings season, there's kind of whisper numbers as well. We all want to hear the news that this company or that company beat expectations. While that's the official numbers, I think the market will be looking for slightly more. And as we saw with the last earnings season, if you don't get that marginal kind of top and bottom line beat, you generally did see the stock prices coming off. So these stocks are aggressively priced, and that's where the official expectations are, but we'll be hoping for a little bit more.
Yeah, because this is, of course, for that quarter ending September. So, I mean, last year was we didn't even have a vaccine at that point. 24% revenue growth. I mean, that is proper chunky. And 24% earnings growth is proper chunky. And we're starting because the market is, by many metrics, expensive. But this kind of starts to unwind that expensive nature if we do get those sort of numbers, particularly if we start getting beats.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, again, the market seems to be in a lot of flux at the moment, more so than usual. And for us, you know, we see just a shift between the different sectors. So I think we were probably chatting on the show a year ago, and we were saying, you know, this again, as you said, this was just post-pandemic. We'd had that initial collapse. We had seen the technology companies like Google and Microsoft and anyone that, you know, it was the old work from home trade, aggressively rallying to all-time highs. And we were looking around and saying, where do we see value at this stage? And that's where I think we discussed on the show that we were going into banks. Banks have now done exceptionally well, and you're seeing those kind of value stocks really come into the fore. And you know, given what we're expecting in terms of higher inflation, I think the value trade is still there. I think that the way that you should be positioning, you know, certainly for the next couple of years, is maybe away from those super aggressive, you know, high priced tech stocks into something a little bit more reasonably priced. Because there's no question that, you know, we're going to see a move into you know, industrial and materials as one aspect of it. But going forward, I just think that, you know, with high inflation, with the supply chain disruptions that we've seen, you know, looking at a slightly more defensive companies, I think it's going to stand you in good stead for the next 2 or 3 years.
A quick point on inflation. You keep mentioning the high inflation. The transitory camp, I mean, the transitory seemed compelling initially. That argument might be weakening a bit.
Yeah, I think so. I don't think anyone can look at the commodity prices and also the wage price inflation that we're seeing and expect you know, general inflation levels, general price levels to stay stable. You know, I think there are absolutely elements of the inflation print, especially in the US, that are transitory. There are certain sectors that, you know, once the world opens up properly and you have tourism and free movement of people, you will see prices obviously going back to more reasonable levels. But there's no way we get through this. And also with a slightly higher inflation, you know, kind of average inflation level, but also just the narrative from central banks has changed, especially overseas. You know, the way that they target inflation has changed a little bit, and that that should lead to higher inflation expectations on anyone that's looking at these things seriously.
Yeah, and I take your point. The narrative has changed. It's kind of like, I don't know, changing the rules mid-game. But I suppose they're the central bankers. They get to choose the rules. Gary Boyson, Rand Swiss, appreciate your time this morning.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Andries Rousseau. He's PwC Africa Energy Utilities and Resource Leader. Andries, appreciate your time this morning. The SA Mine Report 2021, which recently came out from PwC. Fascinating reading, as always. What really strikes me is, I mean, right up front, I think it's page 4, we see a selection of the various different commodities based back 3 years, and 2 years. Coal is really one of the big winners there. I mean, if the PGM basket ahead of all, then iron ore, coal just behind, platinum and gold individually lagging. Coal really is having a solid run, even as the world is sort of talking and moving towards green/renewable.
Absolutely. Well, coal has had a phenomenal run. I mean, currently the Richards Bay API price is sitting at above $200 per ton. A year ago, there was closer to 50. So, yeah, amazing turnaround for coal. And it really backed on the demand for energy that we are seeing globally on the back of the recovery post-COVID in many countries. And although renewables will certainly be the bulk of new energy added, baseload at the moment globally is still very much coal dominant. And if there's not enough energy, countries need coal and therefore prices are going up.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. I mean, yeah, our future is renewable, but at this point, the power is still created by coal. We will get there in time. Interestingly, part of the report was a Fitch Solutions forecast, which actually says locally production is not picking up. And of course, we've got some fairly significant challenges with Transnet and the Richards Bay coal terminal.
Yeah, that's unfortunately the case. So our local coal production was down on last year up to June. I think those are the latest stats available from Stats SA on coal production data. And export volumes through Richards Bay coal terminal has actually declined a little bit, sitting at sort of 72 million tonnes a year at the moment. It can be much higher. I mean, unfortunately, Transnet had a very weak first 6 months of this year. If you look at a company like Exxaro's production forecast for the year, they say they've adjusted downwards 9 to 11% as a result of Transnet freight rail constraints. So a sad state of affairs, and really infrastructure bottlenecks is unfortunately one of the challenges that our country will will have to face going forward. We need to resolve these bottlenecks in order to benefit from the commodity boom that we are seeing at the moment.
And this isn't, I mean, you know, Transnet, the problems there are not completely new. I mean, this isn't something that's going to suddenly disappear. You mentioned Exxaro, they certainly, in the last set of results, they're not thinking things are going to suddenly pick up and they can push more capacity via Richards Bay coal terminal.
No, unlikely so. Well, it's a structural issue that needs to be addressed. And there's lots of scope for business and Transnet to work together in order to address it. And I think lots of willingness from parties involved to make it work. We're seeing it in coal, but we are certainly also seeing it in the likes of manganese exports where the constraints are just there. But at the moment, Transnet freight rail takes care of about 20% of our payload exporting. And in the country. So, I mean, if we say 80% is then done on trucks, completely inefficient, bad if we talk about climate change and the environment in terms of emissions. So lots of scope to improve that, I believe.
And I mean, I suppose part of our bottlenecks in the infrastructure is actually helping those prices remain elevated. Is there a sense? I mean, the move from $50 to $200 a ton is extreme. Is there a sense that this can sort of continue over the next couple of years? I mean, as you say, we're going to be using coal for a while still.
Yes, I wouldn't say remaining at these high levels. And our constraints really doesn't impact the global prices. Mm-hmm. I think we need to say that up front. The global prices are high because there's global demand. So Africa's is delivering about 8% of seaborne coal globally. So a very small percentage. Mm-hmm. So our constraints in the coal space is certainly not driving the prices. Will prices stay this high? Definitely not. I mean, these are really record prices. They will come off, but will they stay at reasonable levels? Absolutely. Coal demand globally is likely, if you look at various commentators, likely to stay at current levels for the next 10 years or so. And therefore, if you've got producing assets, you should be able to benefit of it. There's, of course, lots of pressure on bringing new supply online from banks, from finances, from environmental lobbying and the rest. So we're just not going to see new coal mines coming online in big volumes. And therefore, existing producers should benefit from the demand that's likely to stay flat for a while.
Yeah, if you've got that capacity and you've got that mining, you're in the pound seat for now. Andries Soso, PwC Africa Energy Utilities and Resources Leader, appreciate your time this morning. That's our poll we're going to be asking on our LinkedIn and Twitter. Are you investing into the coal stocks? I mean, Exxaro, Thungela's resources had an astounding run. Have your vote, have your say on our LinkedIn and Twitter profiles.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Neil Padua, Coronation Fund Manager at their Global Managed Fund. Neil, appreciate the time this morning. Digging through the fund, I mean, the one thing that really struck me, your fund isn't a classic balanced. You've kind of shied away from the 60-40, the idea that you 60% equities, 40% into bonds, yet sort of moving away from that sort of global asset allocation as it's usually run. You're still managing to get the returns out of the fund. I suppose that really is, in the cliche, it's stock picking and getting that part right.
Hi, Simon. Good morning. That's right. And I think you made an important point in the beginning in that the traditional 60-40 balanced fund, which has played a valuable role for investors historically, especially those with a moderate risk tolerance, we think there's a risk that the performance of the past is unlikely to be repeated in future. And if you think of a typical 60-40 fund, it has 40% in fixed income.
Yeah.
And historically, that played a very important role for investors. Firstly, the returns through the cycle that fixed income portfolio gave you were actually decent. And that's because the starting yields were sufficient. They were sufficiently high and they were ahead of inflation. And that simply isn't the case today. So, for example, the yield on the U.S. 10-year treasury is 1.5%. And if you invest in that, that essentially locks in a negative real rate of return. So it's exactly not what you want to do when one is investing. And secondly, the stabilizing effect that fixed income portion provided is really more muted. The lower rates are, the less downside protection one has.
Mm-hmm.
And typically that fixed income part of the portfolio has provided a shock absorber. When equities sell off, typically government bonds increase in value. Now, the lower your starting yields are, the less the less that shock absorber can function. So we think investors really need to move away from this 40% allocation to fixed income, and I think that's what you refer to in our global managed fund, where we find a much broader range of assets that we actually think are more attractive and perform a better role for the risks that investors face today.
Yeah, and looking through it, I mean, and there is some, absolute return inflation-linked bonds and the like, but I take your point. And I suppose the critical component really was, as things were, when the rates were changing, it was cognizant on the managers to spot that and adapt accordingly. I quickly want to touch on one of the stocks in your fund, which is JD.com. You mentioned that you've held it since it listed, about 7 years ago, 2014, if memory serves correct. Obviously, there's been some pressure in China. We've seen tech crackdowns, but you're still liking a tech stock in the China space.
It's a great question. And a lot has changed in China. So I'm sure your listeners are all aware of the regulatory onslaught. Mm-hmm. It's felt like an onslaught at times. There's been week after week, sometimes day after day, a new regulation and really quite intrusive regulation from the Chinese regulator and from the politicians in China. So if we step back, it's quite clear to us that I think the hurdle rate for investing in China has increased.
Mm-hmm.
The uncertainty has gone up and the risks have gone up. We wouldn't debate that. But there are a couple of things. Some of the regulations we feel have been quite heavy-handed. They could have been done more efficiently. But many of them are actually just regulatory catch-up to what we're seeing in the U.S. For example, regulations around privacy, regulations around, protecting users' data. These are just the right things to do for users on the internet, and we don't think it's a game changer for the economics of many of the Chinese internet businesses. Then the third thing is that if you look at individual companies, some are set to benefit from these regulatory changes. And we think JD is potentially one of those companies. One of the core parts of the regulatory, core part of the regulations that have been coming out of China is an anti-monopolistic stance. So they really want to ensure that these dominant tech platforms are treating their clients fairly and operating in an not in an anti-competitive manner. If you look at the e-commerce industry, which is where JD competes, they're actually the number two in that industry. Alibaba leads with about a 60% market share. JD is far behind at about 20% market share. So by no means are they the monopolistic business in that sector. If you look at what they're doing, they're investing massively in infrastructure to fulfill goods to their customers. They employ all their staff. They treat them very well. They provide appropriate benefits. And really at the core, what they're doing is offering a wide selection of goods to consumers at a good price, good quality, and they fulfill very, very quickly. So there's great customer service. To us, that doesn't seem, meaningfully at risk, even given the increased regulations that we're seeing. And then finally, if we compare the valuation to what we think it's worth, we see a huge amount of upside. Just by way of example, if you exclude the net cash on the balance sheet and if you exclude its investments, we think the core e-commerce business is trading on less than 10 times earnings, which is extremely cheap for something that's growing north of 20%. And if we do the same exercise for a business like Amazon, which I think is actually a phenomenal business, the implied valuation on their e-commerce business is north of 30 times. And that just serves to highlight, I think, some of the discounts we're seeing in these Chinese businesses, in particular something like JD, which we actually think is on the right side of the regulatory change.
Yeah, I like your point there. When the state is cracking down on monopolies, well, find number two, because they're the one who's actually going to benefit from that process. Neil Padoa, Coronation Fund Manager at the Global Managed Fund, appreciate the early morning. That's it for the show today. Our poll yesterday, which we asked on our LinkedIn and Twitter, we asked if you were buying the miners as underlying commodities were running hard Thursday, Friday. And again, yesterday they ran. A third of you were saying, yep, absolutely. Just over 40% of you said you already had some miners. Good on you folks. And a fifth of you were still concerned around the sustainability of it and said thanks, but no thanks. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. Podcast available just after 7. Huge thanks to my team, Eddie Nebuchle, Nicole and Masekhla, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning contributions. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.